You can see, I mean, we're talking about sort of subtle mechanisms here today. It's sort of subtle in the title, too. I'm glad he read it to you because it's a little hard to read. This is the long-term ecological research site, and there's many, many people that contribute to it at Kellogg Biological Station, funded by NSF. But I'm just going to highlight a few, including my students, Brooke Wilkie and Courtney Gallagher, the LFL project manager, Lowell Gentry, and the overall PI for the LTER at KBS, Phil Robertson. So what direction are we headed? Well, if you've ever been on a field day, such as our colleagues shown here, you may see very dramatic differences, such as here, this erosion versus a green carpet of cover crops. But, and then you know what direction we're headed, but usually, we see much more subtle differences. In long-term trials, we're trying to simulate row crop systems and farmers, as we also find in our long-term trials that it's quite challenging sometimes to achieve that green carpet of cover crop, maybe patchy areas. So it takes time is one of the ways, or perhaps transects, there's a number of different ways, but long-term trials let us look at insights that are much more subtle that come over time, and especially when we look at realistic systems. Oh, the overarching question of the LTER is this: can biological management substitute in some ways for chemical management? And today I'm going to focus in on the long-term feedbacks in terms of nitrogen and phosphorus cycling, and what are the nutrient management implications. If you look at our nutrient recommendations in extension, we often, for manures or cover crops, talk about a third being available about in the first year, perhaps 10% in year two. Some people take into account manure from 2 years ago, but zero after that. Now, is this a real-world situation? Well, emerging evidence from long-term trials is showing that actually we are also altering the soil. So there may be an increase in nitrogen supply capacity. So we need to be thinking about what sort of hypotheses or models should this influence our management recommendations if we've changed the underlying soil supply capacity, as we heard a little bit from Lloyd Drinkwater yesterday about the feedbacks in terms of nitrogen fixation in that case, as you change your ground you're standing on. So long-term trial design at the Kellogg Biological Station includes differences in management intensity. We have perennial systems, right, integrated into this randomized complete block design, including alfalfa as a monoculture, the queen of forages, a very successful monoculture perennial, vegetative perennial. We have early successional, or some farmers call it the weedy plots, an old field system, very diverse perennial vegetation maintained as vegetative through occasional burning. Then we have a three-row crop rotations. I'm going to focus today in on the conventional corn, soybean, wheat, and the low input, and the organic. So all of these have three crop rotation. The low input system, T3, and the organic system, both have a winter cover, which I'll go over in more detail. The low input, it has two-thirds reduction in fertilizer and herbicides. So it was designed at the time of what we call LISA systems, a low input system, and uses much reduced synthetic inputs. And the organic has no manure, so it is a legume in terms of nitrogen based system. And I will also try and show some evidence for perhaps legumes are also influencing the phosphorus cycling. So what do we mean by winter cover? If you follow the crop rotation of corn, soybean, wheat, and actually we don't have every phase every year. So those of us who are into long-term trials will know that means that in any year, a given year, this, for example, is red clover. So it was interseeded into the wheat phase of the rotation. So all of the row crop systems out there will be in wheat. In March, they're frost-seeded, grow through the year. The wheat's taken off in July. And then the red clover, as you see here, grows luxuriantly, and then, hopefully, and then it is incorporated in the spring right before the corn phase. After the corn phase, historically, red clover was interseeded in corn, but this was not very successful, and so a rescue cereal rye cover crop was grown. And now it is actually the protocol, because it is much more successful to get a cover crop, to use a cereal rye cover crop planted after corn harvest around November, right about now. And we it does successfully in Michigan conditions establish. The third year is also true in the conventional because it is the small grain wheat, so it's not a cover crop, but it is providing living cover in that third year. These are hectare-sized plots, randomized complete block design with six replications. I'll be focusing in on the conventional, which again follows recommendations for high input system, low input, organic, and alfalfa and successional systems. So these perennials is a little bit different than some long-term trials. There is perennial systems, including even a poplar, which I won't talk about today, that are integrated into the landscape. So this was set up, it really allows us to look at quite different systems all in a replicate design. So what are some system responses we're seeing? Well, as you can see, so there's some of the challenges of measuring soil carbon over time, but it is becoming clear that alfalfa, and interestingly, the organic, which remember only has a living cover in the winter, has had no manure. Obviously, we had manure put on it. Many other people have seen carbon sequestration in organic systems with manure, but just having that living cover each winter seems to be allowing it to sequester carbon similar to the alfalfa, which of course has a forage crop being pulled off it every year. What is happening with our grain yields? Well, soybean, somewhat similar to what we heard from Dr. Cavagelli yesterday, is quite successful in general, but there is a weed issue, at least in 2003. The LTER group has made an investment in microplots, which means within that hectare, there's small areas where extra weeding is done, so we can see how much weeding contributes to differences in yield between the treatments. And also in some of the treatments we have nitrogen added, extra nitrogen, so you can see how much nitrogen contributes. And in this case, it is very clearly was a weed issue. So learning to manage weeds is always an issue in organic systems. Now, corn is, of course, the high nutrient demanding crop in the rotation, and not surprisingly, especially initially, early on, in this rotation, there was a lot of challenges, particularly in the system that's only getting red clover, the organic system, for its nitrogen inputs. And it has been a challenge. In some years, it has been as high as the other systems, but not in all by any means. And it does appear to be highly nitrogen issue. The low input system, which again has only a third fertilizer, in other words, we're just putting a basal initial fertilizer on, is able to maintain yields and even be higher in some years. So that's pretty exciting. Our low input system is performing very well. And this is reflected here in this way of presenting nitrogen use efficiency, looking at grain yield of corn in relationship to the nitrogen added, which is showing a marked increase over time due to these higher yields in the low input system. So what is that coming from? Well, just want to show a little bit here on estimated nitrogen fixation. We can see that we're growing the red clover more successfully over time. Back when it was started in 89, the hairy vetch was used, was not very successful, perhaps the variety. Red clover is, over time, becoming very much more of a high performer and contributing to the system. Perhaps through the accumulation, like as I mentioned earlier, active nitrogen fraction, or through this increase in biomass being put in the last few years. This is inorganic nitrogen dynamics. This is a tremendous amount of work by the crew, where they're taking monthly, sometimes more frequently, inorganic nitrogen samples, in other words, potassium chloride extracts, I'm showing it here for the corn system, in the corn phase, so that's why it's only those years, because those are corn years. As I said, only every phase is not represented every year. As you can see over time, 1999 and in 2002, the circles there, we are starting to see apparently higher nitrogen supply capacity, even in the presence of corn. So other people have looked at nitrogen, but my student, Courtney Gallagher, became interested in phosphorus system feedbacks. There's some evidence that perhaps some, particularly alfalfa, certainly things like lupin, some legumes may alter phosphorus in different pools in the soil. So she was interested, will increasing legume diversity or management intensity enhance these soil phosphorus pools? There's also some published literature, mostly based on nutrient budgets, saying that phosphorus declines in organic systems, so that was part of the interest here. So again, focusing in on alfalfa, on the conventional organic corn soybean wheat, and on this successional system to give us the diversity with some legumes, all legumes, but removal every year, and then this corn soybean wheat system with or without red clover. Now I just want to point out that this is a hectare plot, but in the north end of it, there's an area for students and anyone else who wants to, and so this is a little plug, if you're interested in doing research in this system, this is a very open, much of this data is available on the website, so if you're interested in pursuing some particular questions that might relate to the long-term ecological research site, certainly feel free to contact us. So, and there's also a very impressive system of archived soils, including, in this case, 1992 had a whole deep soil profile, and we also looked at recent soils in 2006. So Courtney measured total phosphorus, particulate organic matter phosphorus, Bray P is inorganic phosphorus, and a bioavailability looking at soybean phosphorus uptake. And she added fertilizer as a manipulation within, again, this microplot area in the north end of the plot. So we sort of predicted that some of her organic measures of phosphorus might be altered, but in fact, inorganic phosphorus from Bray extract, a classic way to look at availability, it's been highly correlated, was actually increased in the organic system. So just adding that winter living cover somehow enhances, shifts the, instead of driving it down, it actually shifted it. And interestingly, there was no fertilizer effect. So here's the main way we manage phosphorus through fertilizer. Actually, when we grew the soybean after adding the phosphorus fertilizer, it didn't alter this in this particular case. Successional systems you might expect with very little offtake except for in the occasional burning, there's not much change over time, as you'll see here. She also looked at, she looked at Headley's, which the data's not all in, but in particular organic matter might be another way to look at organic phosphorus. So in this light-large fraction, she looked at total P in that fraction. This is 1992, the archived soil samples. So initially, in 1988, before, one would assume that this was an old, this was a row crop corn-based system, so phosphorus would have accumulated from fertilizer. 1992, it's been driven down in alfalfa, conventional, and organic. Stay remains high in successional. But over time, by 2006, alfalfa, surprisingly to us, since remember Bray P was low and actually you're taking off three harvests a year, is up, perhaps the extensive root system. Conventional, about the same. Organic is also high, so particular organic matter and Bray P is showing some increase over time, which was quite surprising and interesting to us. Fertilizer had no effect on particular organic matter phosphorus. So overall, we are seeing increased soil carbon and nutrient supply capacity in these low input cover crop systems. Phosphorus availability was interestingly a function of management history, not just recent phosphorus fertilizer, which is a surprising effect. And even really recent, we looked at soybean residues and they had really no effect in the immediate term, but longer term, it was a long-term management history that's altering these pools of phosphorus. And we also found high nutrient efficiency. Basically, you're getting better bang for your buck if you put in a small amount of fertilizer in the winter cover crop, low input, low synthetic input system, your fertilizer requirements are reduced by 2/3 and you're able to maintain yields as just as high. So that is, there were, however, trade-offs in the zero synthetic input, the organic system, cover crop growth varied, and nitrogen supply was insufficient to support high corn yields in some years. At least in this alfasol site. One of the other interesting points is that cover crop varied over time, and we are also seeing differences over space, and this is an area we're continuing to pursue with the biometrician, looking at how topography varies and how cover crops vary, because you don't always get successful establishment everywhere, and we think this has long-term implications. And I really want to give my thanks to the LTR faculty, staff, and students, and to different farmer innovators that are trying some of these different systems in their own farms. Thanks very much.
There is
Yes.
Did you soil sample below the surface for the phosphorus, and is it possible that the alfalfa can bring the phosphorus below?
I didn't show that data, but she used years when they had deep soil profiles. They don't take them every year. And there was no difference in any of the treatments in total P or Bray P at different depths. Now, I can't say that, and if they go down to about 1 meter, I believe, I can't say that, you know, we didn't miss it in some way, the particular fraction. There may be certainly some, I would expect there's some recycling going on, particularly in the alfalfa system. Perhaps in the red clover, although it doesn't have the deep tapping root. But remember, the organic system also increased it, surprisingly. But it may also just be altering shifts. So the phosphorus is not moving just into occluded pools. It's actually becoming available. Could be. Any other questions? Yes. Actually, they really guard carefully. It's Hector-sized blood. So this is not Swiss cheese, and they have a very careful sampling system. There is a lot of interesting papers. I hope you will look at the website and see a lot of the other different work. Courtney and Brooke's work is their recent dissertations. They're not yet in the literature. Okay.